May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? We're gonna have a problem here.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the victors. Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.
Hi, and welcome to the Real Weird Sisters. I'm Martha.
And I'm Alice.
And today we're here with a very special, special topics episode. We're here with another Sorting Hat. And this is one that we weren't really planning to do. This was never really a show that was on our list, but the people that we're sorting this with are definitely ones that we wanted to talk to. So it worked out super well that one of our listeners reached out suggesting that we collaborate with this podcast, and the stars aligned. And we're here today with Jess and Zach of Off Book Podcast. Welcome to the show, Jess and Zach.
Hello.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, so we are here to sort Les Mis, the musical, and Alice and I, we are fans of Les Mis. I don't think we could consider ourselves super fans, so we did have to do a lot of research going into this episode.
We made you do work.
No, it was good.
I hate it.
You can't have to do work for a podcast.
That's not the appeal of podcast.
Well, we liked the work, so we're glad that we got to do it.
Well, we operate on a very different.
Yeah, we avoid work at all costs. Yeah. You didn't read the book, did you?
Well, Alice had already read it, so I'm just speaking for myself, really, when I say we're not super fans.
Yeah, I actually did read the book a few years ago, but I kind of read it fast, so I don't like have a super clear memory of the details of that, but I have read it, and then we both, you know, rewatched the movie because that was not clear in our mind either.
Yes, being in Montana, we don't get to see a ton of musicals. We both, I think, like, considering we're from Montana, we are big fans of musicals, but, like, compared to the average person, I think, like, our musical knowledge is, like, pretty slim.
Well, totally. I think that's probably compared to the most of, like, it's, you know, it's not just Montana. It's if you don't live in one of the huge theater cities. For a second, I thought you were going to say, we live in Montana and a bunch of movies don't get here.
Oh, well.
Which I was sure was
also true. Les Mis did make it over here, but.
Yeah, not every movie does, but. So are you guys big Les Mis fans?
Les Mis is pretty big for me. I love Les Mis. I would put pretty definitely in my top 10 musicals and possibly top 5. Probably top 5. I love it. It's so sweeping. It's so epic. The music is so, so great. And I think I saw it also at a time where I was like, this is amazing. The stage moves. Come on. Big fan.
I've actually never seen it in its entirety. I have done it. And I was part of a couple of people that wrote a show called Les Sizzlerob, which is all of Les Miserables, but inside of a sizzler. I have listened to it all the way through many, many times, and I've done it once. I was the pimp in the very beginning, I also was one of the revolutionaries, and I think a poor person, a bunch of chorus stuff, but it's, I like Les Mis very, very much. I think it's also in my top 10.
Yeah, I think the main thing for us, like, we both really love, like, we've loved watching the movie, like, when it came out, and, like, Alice saw it in London, but it's just such, like, a beast of a story that I feel like we just felt like we did not know it well enough at all to start, so, like, it definitely was great to, like, dive into it more, because it's just, there's so much, it's so complicated, and, like, so many words in every song, like, it's just a lot to
take
in.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I think these characters are going to be really interesting for to examine from the Sorting Hat perspective, because sometimes we've sorted other things where maybe the characters are not quite as complex or the storyline is not as rich, and I think that this one really does lend itself very well to that format.
Very cool. I agree. And you have, by the way, Jess is a Gryffindor and I am a Slytherin, so you are probably going to get varying opinions on varying things from us.
we tend to
agree on most stuff.
That's interesting for a Gryffindor and Slytherin to be in such agreement. So we don't have any Hufflepuffs here, because I'm a Gryffindor and Alice is a Ravenclaw. where we have very little Hufflepuff representation here, but we do try to speak for the Hufflepuffs because they don't like it when we don't speak for
them. I will guess that maybe most of us, it could be a prime secondary house.
It's my secondary house, too.
Yeah, it felt right. It felt right to guess that.
Yeah, thank you.
It's good that we have a Slytherin, though, because we do get sometimes some feedback that we're a little too hard on Slytherin, so it's nice to have a representative.
Of course you are, because everyone is. Because one understands
Poor
it.
Victor,
and no one does
yes.
it right.
They're so complicated. so just getting into Harry Potter background a little bit, I know you guys both have quite a extensive background with Harry Potter from what I know, which is not very much, actually. But can you guys talk a little bit about your backgrounds with Harry Potter?
Yeah, I mean, we were both basically... growing up as the books were coming out, we were basically the target age range for these books. So we were, you know, launch parties, day that came out, reading it crazy in the fervor of all of it. The movies were not as big of a deal for me. I think Jess is into them a little bit more than I am, but both of us, our first love is the books, and the love goes very, very deep to the point where we, to this day, hold writers' meetings in the Three Broomsticks in Universal Studios Orlando. Sorry, Los Angeles. Not Orlando. That would be a very long way to go for a writers' meeting.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Gotta go on that Gringotts ride. Yep. What Zach said, love it so much. For a while we were the same age, and we eventually, I think, like, we're 20 when he's 17. But for a very long time, it was like right there, right there, right there. And I also, I revisit 5, 6, and 7 on audiobook every fall. I love it. I love it so much. I think I've definitely seen the movies more than Zach. They do not compare at all.
Yeah.
I also just saw Cursed Child in May. That was pretty awesome.
So lucky.
Yeah, I love it. I had my bachelorette party was Harry Potter themed.
Oh, that's awesome.
Hashtag Bride Who Lived. So,
Oh, and I'm one of the writers of a show called Voldemort, which is a ridiculous musical about him when he was at Hogwarts that just closed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah.
Yeah, no, it's good to hear that we have two big book fans here, because that's definitely how we are as well. We appreciate the movies for what they are, but of course,
If anyone wants to make anything Harry Potter related, I will consume it.
Yeah.
I just don't hold it on the same pay level.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Yes.
Books.
Yes. So actually that's a question that we got, from one of our listeners prepping for this show is, what are your two opinions on the music of Harry Potter? For instance, the Toad Choir that's in the third movie, or the song Weasley is Our King, et cetera.
And, don't forget the, Hogwarts,
of course, yes.
Something, please. I think I could do with some more music, honestly, but I don't hate that frog choir. They're very fun and silly. I'm also like, you know, you get so accustomed to you're seeing it from Harry's point of view, but it's nice to every once in a while be like, oh yeah, surely there are other clubs at this school. Like, people have other interests.
Because, like, not everyone is, like, fighting to literally survive every school year. So, like, people were doing stuff.
Right.
Some people actually
have free
time. I
know that, like, Dobstones and Charms Club or whatever, but, like, for sure. And
you also gotta figure some of these kids were starting bands. Like, because if you going through high school, one out of every three people was in or started a band. So, like, Frog Choir is start a magic band for 100% sure.
Who at Hogwarts is starting a band, do you think?
You mean, like, in canon?
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm just curious.
Definitely Luna's doing that, like, she's walking around with a ukulele sometimes.
Yes.
I feel like that might be a Hufflepuff thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, let's get some snacks and jam out in our cozy common room.
Really?
You know?
I was going to say that kind of like, yeah, I think that part of it is right. But if you want to talk about like the the dream of being a rock star, that feels very much like a Gryffindor or Slytherin thing to me.
For sure.
Yeah,
for sure. But like,
I feel like Slytherins are starting a metal band.
Yeah.
Well, and then
people who are just like, we have some guitars, let's hang out.
Yeah, no, for sure. The guy who like knows all the words to every song and has the guitar at the party and just like busts it out and everyone's into it is a Hufflepuff. The one who busted out and everyone is like not into it and it's not the time, that's a Gryffindor or a Slytherin. Yes. But the Hufflepuff knows how to like walk that line a little bit better.
Very Ooh, but I don't get like a really good like Fiona Apple out of Slytherin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I think Ravenclaw would also have quite a few because they're kind of the artsy type, you know?
Yeah, speaking of you guys are Ravenclaw.
Yeah. I am trying to... Well, I guess maybe I don't need all the, like, wannabe rock stars in my house, but...
No, I think yeah, because...
I'll tell you the type of band that's coming out of Ravenclaw. You got your Vampire Weekend, you know?
Yes.
And then, like... Well, going to Columbia or something. Yeah, and they're doing, like, cool...
really pretentious ones.
Yeah.
Yes, totally. So, yeah, actually, speaking of music, we do have a song that a friend of the podcast submitted.
Yeah, friend, not an associate in any way.
No, not related to us, although he would like to think differently. This is a song from Shut Up Tim, as I'm sure our listeners have guessed. And just to prep you guys a little bit, Tim sings about one thing and one thing only.
He sings. He only has one topic. He's kind of a one-trick pony.
It has no relevance to this episode that we're about to. Well, actually, it does, but the topic of the song does not.
And also, it's a stretch to call it a trick.
Yeah, and to call it a song. Okay, here we go.
Welcome to the Earwolf Theater. We now present Off Book.
Hedwig, moment of silence for the white owl, because she's dead.
Okay. So,
hey Tim, our lawyers are going to be in touch.
How dare you, sir.
You are intellectual property.
Yeah, I think your voices are kind of in there in the background of that. He couldn't find a karaoke version of it.
Also, we got to put out a karaoke version, Zach. Otherwise, it's going to keep happening.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'll actually do that right after the pod. That will be very easy to do.
I could barely hear what he was saying at first because all I could hear was Off Book, but he's singing Hedwig.
Yes.
I said, oh, okay.
Yeah, moment of silence. For the white owl, because she died.
She's dead.
The dying bird sound at the end.
Great lyrics.
He's very insensitive.
You know what this does bring up about a difference in movie and book that I don't like, where they're like, oh, Hedwig gave me away in the movie? How they know when they're like, they have the seven potters.
Yes.
Book, it's like, because you used Expelliarmus, and that's like... babyish. And
right,
like,
I think that was a little too advanced for the movie viewers.
From what they think the movie viewers are like, yeah.
that Hedwig death is, like, not given its, such a bummer, but that was a horribly great song. It was both horrible and great.
Yeah, those are the words for it.
Okay, well, thanks to Tim for that, and hopefully...
What is the one thing that Tim always sings about?
Hedwig.
Well, on our show, we often like to acknowledge Hedwig and the beautiful owl that she was. So we'll have often a moment of silence for her. But unfortunately, he thought it would be a good idea to start, you know, ruining the moment of silence with his voice. So he does a lot of different tributes to Hedwig.
The moment of silence is by definition very loud and unsilent.
Exactly. Yep.
I understand the comic premise of this bit. Hey, Tim, my lawyers are still going to be in touch. My lawyers are my dad, so get ready.
He's in trouble. Okay. All right. Well, I think that just about brings us to our actual sorting. Before we actually get into the sorting, finally, we do have to introduce one more entity that is with us today, and that is Le Sorting Beret.
Yeah, we kind of deliberated over what to call the sorting hat, and Martha had a really good idea.
Well, I wanted to call it the bicorn hat, but clearly that was not a good idea.
But luckily, Jess and Zach came up with the Sorting Beret, Le Sorting Beret.
Yeah.
And I think that that's pretty good representation of, you know, the French aspect of this.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, Eponine's always wearing that beret real far back, and she's always wearing, like, a dress with a belt, a big old belt. She always looks like a 90s star.
Yeah,
you know,
so
like,
out of place.
Yeah, and so I was like, I think we got to honor that beret. Also, the iconic image of the girl, which is actually Cosette, young Cosette, I believe she's also wearing a little beret.
In the picture, so, you know, in the poster, I think that's correct.
In that sort of iconic image. But I do like that it sort of tipped your bicorn hat, that maybe you're thinking of this story more from Javert's point of view. So what does that say about you and the law?
Yes, I am such a Javert. that's me. Yeah.
Whenever your friend's at a party and they're like, we should turn the music down, you're like, ah, such a Javert.
Yes, that's me. I just am all about justice. No mercy for me. So I wear a bicorn hat. All right. Well, I think we'll actually get into sorting now after a lot of talking that I've done. So I think we'll start with Thénardier. Thénardier. I'm not good at the pronunciations, clearly, because I can't even say beret. Thénardier. Jess, would you like to start with your sorting of the innkeeper?
Sure. So we're going Mr. Thénardier first.
Yes, sure, yes.
Guys, and I'm so sorry, Zach, to play on the stereotypes, but this dude's a straight-up Slytherin. He's cunning. He's only out for himself. He's money and power hungry. He steals a ring off of a corpse in the sewer. Thénardier, straight-up Slytherin.
Are you going to sort him and his wife into different houses?
Nah, they're both.
See, because for me, the difference between the Thénardier and sorry to like jump forward here.
That's great.
Because I largely agree with you here, but I think that the difference is that I think he's a little bit not as good of, like, he's a little braggadocious about it in a way that feels Gryffindor to me, whereas she is a little bit like, they're both cutthroat, no doubt. But I feel like she is more of a Slytherin and he is more of a Gryffindor. Although I wouldn't fight you too hard on that, because I think that both of them probably lean pretty hard into Slytherin.
I hear that, yeah. I think also when they had money, they're very classist. So that also, I'm again sorry to only play on the negative tropes, but that is more of like a Slytherin vibe. But I agree, she is definitely more Slytherin. She's a little bit more like Lady Macbeth pulling the strings. But
because I think she's the clever one. I think she's the clever one. I think she's the brains of the operation. It's also hard because we don't see a whole lot of interaction of them like separate for each other. They basically function as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm comfortable with them being in Slytherin.
Yeah, I think that I see what you're saying about him being a little bit more of the like the face, whereas she's like more behind the scenes, like definitely the brains of the operation. But I also think like their motivations are very similar, and they're both definitely motivated by greed and money and like advancing themselves. I don't really think that. I mean, I think that the underlying values are the same, which is why I would put them both in Slytherin.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm going to push back a little bit. Greed is not a Slytherin quality.
Okay. Well, it can be like an extension of Slytherin. Like, taken to the extreme, the ambition can go to greed.
For sure.
And the self-serving quality of, you know, that the Slytherins putting themselves before others. Not always.
All Slytherins.
No, but that's Ravenclaw too. Like, there are other houses that have like that bent to them. They focus and they do go about it in different ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to fight too hard to keep the Thénardiers out of Slytherin. I feel like that is accurate.
Right. And I mean, I think that they both, like you guys are saying, like it makes sense that they would both be in Slytherin just because they do make such a good pair and they really like, you know, they both have the same goals in life, and that is to, you know, basically, you know, make a living and, you know, the best way that they can, I guess.
Yeah, they're my OTP. they're such a great match. No, I also think, like, just going back to, like, why I really do think Thénardier is definitely a Slytherin is, I mean, I think, like, his charm, like, he's definitely, like, because he's the one who's, like, in the forefront all the time, like, he's able to really, like, schmooze people, and, like, I think that charming characteristic can definitely be a Slytherin one. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I think the whole ends justifying the means of basically their whole op and is pretty Slytherin-y.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I guess we can do this together. We can put the Le Sorting Beret on both Thénardier and Madame Thénardier.
You're so good at French,
I'm so good at French. let's do a double sorting here, and we can hear what the beret's verdict is.
Le beret says Slytherin!
It's perfect.
I love
it. It's so perfect.
It's good, yes.
I think that's a better voice than whatever the Bicorn Hat's voice would have sounded like. So. That's great. Okay.
Oh, real quick, I did want to say that Madame Thénardier, I see her clear parallel as Bellatrix.
Oh,
maybe that's just that.
How did you make that connection?
Maybe that's just the Helena Bonham Carter portraying both of them, but I do see some parallels.
Yeah. I think it's mostly Helena Bonham Carter, but...
Yeah, I mean, Madame Thénardier is not a psychopath.
Well, she's pretty horrible to Cosette.
Like, but Bellatrix isn't, like, flirty. Like, I mean, I think the looks are blinding.
I mean, she flirted with Voldemort. Did you not read Cursed Child, Martha?
Yeah, she's such a flirt. Okay. All right, well, let's move on, unless you two had any other Harry Potter parallels for either of them. Actually... I had one for Thénardier, which was Mundungus.
But that's for sure. That's a good one.
He's not really...
Yeah, I definitely also get Horace Slughorn vibes, you know, like, you know, that same sort of schmoozy side.
Yeah.
Except that, yes, I agree. Except that Slughorn, I don't feel like Slughorn is as willing to, like, get down in the mud as the two of them are. He's like a proper little boy.
Yes, very, very proper. Yeah, I can't see him digging through the sewers. He would, like, want somebody else to do that for him.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go on. Let's sort another less major character. I mean, I guess in the grand scheme of things, he's quite major, but one who has fewer lines. Let's go ahead and sort Bishop Muriel. Alice, what were your thoughts on him?
Okay, well, I mean, he's... From what I know of him, he's not in it as much, but he does play a very key role, like you said. I think the main thing is his tendency towards forgiveness and towards really understanding, being empathetic and understanding where people are coming from rather than, like, judging them based on pure fact. So... To me, that speaks of a Slytherin, or sorry, not Slytherin. I misspoke. Of a Hufflepuff type quality, and I see that as sort of the charity aspect of Hufflepuff. I think Hufflepuffs would be the most likely to forgive someone for stealing from them, and I think they would likely, you know, give them more resources to help themselves, that kind of thing. So that's why I see him as a Hufflepuff from that charity side.
Definitely. What were your thoughts, Zach?
That was my impulse as well. Was that it? Was that or Ravenclaw? And I couldn't really put a finger on why. I think that I think the whole idea of kind of trying to set it, well, it's hard because Hufflepuff is also the rules following house of them and Ravenclaw a little bit, but. I think I would also stick with Hufflepuff, if for no other reason than it does seem to be a job based entirely on empathy.
Definitely, yeah. I also, I mean, just to, I mean, I also have him in Hufflepuff. I think Merciful, obviously, like, is his number one trait. Like, he is the one who teaches Jean Valjean mercy, and I think mercy goes along with charity and acceptance. And that's definitely Hufflepuff characteristics. I can actually see the Ravenclaw argument. I hadn't really thought about that, but just because, like, being a spiritual person, I think that Ravenclaws, I think, like, that kind of characteristic is more commonly found in Ravenclaws. So I could see that, but I think, like, the reason that he's in the profession he's in is because of those characteristics, like compassion and mercy that he really, you know, exemplifies so much. So I also have him in Hufflepuff. What did you think, Jess?
Oh yeah, come on. No, I can't see any other house being that kind.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody you know, like I think every other house has too much ego to be like as kind as the bishop is. for sure Hufflepuff. And I think, like, I guess I wouldn't associate Ravenclaw with having, like, a spiritual life. I would think that they'd be too daunted by logic. But
I think we've talked about it a lot on our show, and I think the thing is that where we see the Ravenclaw side coming into play is sort of with more of the Luna Lovegood types, where they're kind of, you can go one of two ways in Ravenclaw. Either you are extremely logical, or you can be sort of like willing to think about the world in different ways and to entertain different kinds of philosophies. That's kind of where we're coming from on that, I think.
That's true. You got to remember Luna. She's just as much of a Ravenclaw. So yeah, I think that's fair. I feel like, yeah, I guess he just seems, it's too nice. It's just like, even if a Ravenclaw, I think, was to do the nice version of it, I don't think it would feel as warm. You know, it'd be something like, I don't know, it would just feel different.
The Ravenclaw just wouldn't, like, if a Ravenclaw woke up and you were stealing candlesticks out of their house, and even if they were, like, making the conscious decision to let you have them, they would just stay in the room and let you leave. They wouldn't, come out and be like, hey, you can have those.
Yeah, and the Gryffindor wouldn't do it without an audience. Like, the Gryffindor would want people to see that they were doing this super charitable act.
Right.
It probably wouldn't happen behind the scenes the way it's happening with the bishop, so.
Yeah.
And they'd also punch them first.
Yeah.
They'd be like, oh, sorry, are you really hungry? Shoot, I already stalked you in the face. Okay, no, chill, take it.
Sorry about it.
Sorry about it.
Yes. Okay, well, did you guys have any Harry Potter parallels for the bishop? I didn't really.
Well, I personally thought Dumbledore, just because it's kind of the old wise figure, but then also because Dumbledore really is very compassionate, and he's very forgiving. Like, he's forgiven so many different things over the years, like Snape, and he's forgiven I don't know, Snape I guess is my main example, but he's forgiven so many people, and he's willing to, I think he's more of the type to value mercy over justice.
I think he's the fat friar, the Hufflepuff ghost. He's a Hufflepuff, and
maybe that's who the fat friar really is.
Yeah, that's possible, right?
Fat friar is this dead character from Les Miserables. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah,
I like the Dumbledore vibes. That also seems like the kind of like moral riddle that Dumbledore would do. He'd be like, you know what? Actually, I want you to have him, and I want you to. And no, I want you to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be Dumbledore's way of, like, teaching Jean Valjean a lesson. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it, except for it's, like, that's who I want Dumbledore to be, but he's not always that way. Like, Dumbledore, I think, does put other things first sometimes, where it's like, okay, Dumbledore. But, yeah, I like that, though. It's better than Hagrid, which is what I wrote down, and I don't even know why. So, we'll just pretend that didn't happen. Let's go ahead and put the beret on to Bishop Muriel's head.
Lizard in beret puts Bishop Muriel in Hufflepuff.
That was really good.
Thank you.
I like what that says about our partnership. I like seeing what you did with what I started.
I was trying to do it exactly, and I just kind of forgot, but it was very
good. We're both just doing cartoonish.
Yeah.
So
correct.
You're
correct.
Pretty safe.
Correct.
Yeah, well, they actually sounded very similar, though, so that's great.
Good.
I mean, it's the same hat, so I don't know why it wouldn't sound similar. It's not either of you. It's just the beret.
Yes.
Okay, so let's move on to yet another character whose name I have trouble pronouncing. Angel Ross.
That's correct.
Oh, thank you. I've been practicing. Jess, do you want to start with him?
Guys, this is a Gryffindor if I ever met him. He's bold. He likes to draw a crowd. He doesn't understand complexities always. He's just like, this is good. I am bold. You be bold with me, Marius. There's nothing else that would matter. Let's go, go, go. Fight, fight, fight. Build the barricade. Wave a flag. I mean, also just red and black. I can't help it. It's like red Gryffindor. I mean, this dude is a GD Gryffindor if I've ever met one.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. It's he is almost like a cartoon of a Gryffindor.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was my first inclination as well for him. And I actually ended up, like, thinking about him for a long time and not ending up with Gryffindor. But I'm definitely seeing the Gryffindor argument. Because what I was thinking of for his main characteristic, like, that I see in the movie especially, and, I mean, I know this is probably different than other reenactments of it, but he, I feel like his main source of his argument with Marius, or Marius, is that, like, they have a, like, difference of values, and I think that Marius's value is definitely, like, heart and, like, you know, putting, you know, love and that kind of thing over necessarily, like, I guess, bigger ideals. And I feel like Enjolras has, like, this big, like, devotion to something bigger than that. And I feel like that seems more like, I'm not articulating this correctly, because I put him in Ravenclaw, but I'm not really sure that that adds up now that I'm saying it. I think it's kind of what I'm seeing is this kind of, like, fanaticism in an Enjolras, where he's, like, so obsessed with his country that he's, like, doing whatever it takes to, like, save it. And I guess that's Gryffindor, too. So now I'm pretty sure I'm convinced that it's Gryffindor for him.
Just talked yourself into Gryffindor you tried to talk us into Ravenclaw.
I don't know why I wrote Ravenclaw. But
I think it's interesting to think of ideals in that way. But I think the naivete with which he thinks that his schoolboy chum can actually, like, have a meaningful impact feels way not Ravenclaw and very Gryffindor. Mm-hmm. That he's, you know, and that martyrdom that he's obviously okay with feels very, very Gryffindor.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that, because I think, like, a lot of Gryffindors, they really are all about, like, a higher cause. I mean, maybe not always for, you know, perfectly selfless reasons, but I think that, I don't think that Enjolras is necessarily totally selfless either. I mean, he does sacrifice himself, but I think it's kind of in the same way that Harry would probably be in that situation as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, think of how often Harry, like, doesn't have a plan, and he's just like, well, let's do it. All I know is gotta do it, and that's very much how this rebellion feels. I mean, they have somewhat of a plan, but it's just like, doesn't matter, let's just show up, and we'll see if someone has heard of any artifact for Ravenclaw, and we'll try to find it, you know. And just sort of like, I think that the type of bravado that he has is very Gryffindor, but still very much motivated by, like, some noble cause. Yeah, he feels real Gryffindor to me. Like, Godric would be like, yeah, I gotta have him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, yeah, I'm convinced too. But I think the main thing I was thinking of with the Ravenclaw argument was sort of like a disdain that I see him having for people who, like, put other things for... I feel like it's sort of an arrogance that he has, or definitely an arrogance that he has, but I think that it is more of a Gryffindor arrogance than a Ravenclaw arrogance. So I'm convinced. Let's go ahead and hear what the Sorting Beret has to say.
Oh, the Sorting Beret! For Enjolras, we will put you in Gryffindor!
Yeah, great. Well, so far we've had some pretty unanimous decisions. Maybe the next one will not be, but we'll see. The next one we have on the list here is Gavroche, and I will start with Gavroche. I felt like this was one of the easiest ones. I feel like he is such a little, like, he's so daring, he's so brave, he puts himself, like, he puts everybody else before himself, except for when he's, like, bragging about himself. And I think that that is what I see as a total Gryffindor move. He sacrifices himself for the good of the movement, and he's just, like, when he sneaks through, like, without even questioning, like, asking for approval or anything, I think that he's definitely got that, like, cockiness of a Gryffindor and that daringness. I think he's a solid Gryffindor.
I think I would put him in Hufflepuff. Because I agree, he is all of those brave things, but he is too, and it's tricky because he is actually being sorted around the age where people would actually be sorted as opposed to all of these adults.
Yes.
But I think he is doing it for all the right reasons and not having any sort of eyes on, like, the acclaim or whatever, which to me is a distinctly, like, fighting for the most pure version of the goal, which is a Hufflepuff thing to me. If he didn't get himself killed at the end, I might actually put him in Slytherin, but he does, so he's not. But yeah, I think he, I don't know if he is, because he's definitely, because I don't, like, bravado is not quite right the word for him, because he's a kid, you know?
Yeah.
I see some Hufflepuff vibes because I think he is also motivated by friendship a little bit, where he like likes hanging out with these dudes, this like surrogate family. He obviously has to find family where he can get it. And so that does, I mean, it is tricky because we see the books through Gryffindor's point of view, so we immediately attribute bravery to Gryffindor's, but all four houses can be brave. It just is like what makes them be brave. And I don't know what makes Gavroche brave. Here's what I'll say. He's a straight up Dobby. So unfortunately we don't know Dobby's house, but like he's a straight up Dobby. I mean, he is the Dobby of this story.
It's funny because we were actually just on our very most recent podcast talking about what house Dobby would be in if he was in Hogwarts or as a student. And we said that he would for sure be a Gryffindor just because of his bravery.
And we're like, it's sort of a similar trait. Like we see loyalty as like the Hufflepuff trait and we see bravery as the Gryffindor trait. But I feel like all houses can be brave and all houses can be loyal, especially Gryffindors can be especially loyal.
Yeah, none of the houses are like mutually exclusive by any one trait, but...
Because I think our first, like, what our discussion on the episode was kind of, we were talking about how Dobby, like, he's definitely really, really loyal, but I think that, like, the way that he expresses his loyalty is a Gryffindor way, and I actually really like the Dobby parallel for Gavroche. Because, I mean, I see what you're saying about the bravado not necessarily being correct, the correct term for a 10-year-old or however old he is. But, I mean, I think he does have, like, that arrogance in a way, like a childish arrogance, I suppose. But I think it's a Gryffindor kind of arrogance where he kind of thinks he's, like, invincible. And I feel like a lot of Hufflepuffs at that age especially are more, like, you know, willing to, not willing, but, you know, a little bit more... not insecure, but a little bit less like wanting to be in the forefront all the time.
Oh, see, I'd say that's a Ravenclaw thing to me.
Yeah, well, I think it's Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff, actually.
Yeah, I can buy that.
Alice, what are your thoughts?
Well, okay, I had him in Gryffindor like you, Martha, just because he's so brave. I mean, he's one of the bravest characters, but. I can definitely see why I can definitely understand the Hufflepuff argument because he is so loyal and because in some ways maybe he's doing what he's doing because of the group mentality thing. I don't know. So I'm a little bit undecided, but I still think I might come down on Gryffindor's side.
Yeah, I like your explanation of Dobby being in Gryffindor, which then makes me think Gavroche would be in Gryffindor. I also think that maybe the kind of like invincibility idea is much more Gryffindor, to be like, I can go out here and I probably won't die.
Yeah.
Rather than like, I think a Hufflepuff will be like, I might die, but I have to for my friends. I think he's more like, and he's also so wisecracking. I mean, he's got some Fred and George in him.
Yeah, he does.
He's kind of like trickstery. He's definitely more like Artful Dodger than Oliver. He's like, you know, whatever. Come with me and I'll show you the ropes, which feels much more Gryffindor than Hufflepuff, to be like, I got it. Come here. I'll show you. Fish. I have a Cockney accent, even though I'm in France.
I was literally complaining about that as we watched the movie. I'm like, why do they have these like extreme accents from England when they're all in France?
I think because I hate it too, but I think it's because we don't actually want to hear French accents. Like, I think for mostly American, for English speaking audiences, we'd be like, ugh, I don't want to listen to that. And I think we don't have an ear for the differences in class.
Yeah.
Where I can tell that when, like, Marius is speaking and he's supposed to sound different from Gavroche or the Thénardiers, that it's like to highlight class for us in a way that we understand, which is like, British accents, but it is very funny to be like this very French play and they're like, hello, welcome to the shanty town.
Yeah, it's like just as accurate to be speaking in American accents for it, but somehow we do a very, very Cockney accent for
in England. You might have started in England. That also might be why.
Okay. Oh yeah, well, that's fair. Okay, well, I'm still pretty team Gryffindor for Gavroche. I don't know.
Yeah, I can jump on board with that.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and hear the Beret's verdict here.
Okay, put that little boy in front of me this time. This Sorting Beret says, Gavroche, Gryffindor.
I was a little bit creepy that time, but I liked it, so it's good. I think
the Sorting Beret was just finally happy to be doing its job, which is sorting children and not grown adults.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes more sense now. Okay, so that was our most contentious one so far.
Oh, it was.
Let's go ahead and sort Marius now. I guess they always say Marius in the movie, but
Martha can't shake saying Marius.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I feel like it's tricky because this is just a thought about in general. We're dealing with a story with such high stakes and revolution that I think because we are like literally able to look at how people behave in battle, I think the instinct would be to put too many of these characters in Gryffindor. I'm not to say that Marius isn't a Gryffindor. I'm positing something thematic about how, you know, lots of people fought at the Battle of Hogwarts, not just Gryffindors. But I think that the first association is Gryffindor because it's like, oh, they fought for a good cause.
We actually ran into something very similar when we did our Hamilton sorting hat because that, with, you know, tons of people being in the war as well, we ended up with a ton of Gryffindors, and I think maybe it was a little overrepresented. So I think that's definitely a really good point that you're making.
I mean, the Slytherins were straight up not allowed to fight in the Battle of Hogwarts, which is pretty shitty.
It was a pretty good idea. The adult ones were,
okay? Slughorn he was there, and he got pals from Hogsmeade, okay? So there were some Slytherins there.
Yeah,
not the students. They had to be in the dungeon.
Right.
Well, it was most of their parents were on the other side, so it's kind of a conflict of interest for them.
Not all of them were. God, I get it, you guys. The books were written from a Gryffindor point of view. But you have to understand that, like, as someone who had to come to, like, when I was sorted via, you know, Pottermore into Slytherin, it kind of makes you stop and think, okay, like, what is this house actually about? If not just, like, blatant racism. If it's not just racism, like, what is it? Because you have to figure 25% of the Wizarding's child population is being sorted into this house. So it can't just be that it's racism.
Yeah. You know? Well, the problem is that she wrote him without thinking, you know, she wrote them for a 10-year-old from the point of view of a 10-year-old whose enemy is in that house.
Right.
So then we only get that shade of that house, really. And unfortunately, we don't. And she doesn't do very much in, like, later canon to give us a ton of great Slytherin examples. Mm-hmm. Like, how rad would it be if, like, I don't know, like, if, like, Tonks were, you know, like, some people who would maybe have Slytherin. I mean, we have some examples. Like, it's cool that Regulus turns.
Well, Tonks is a Hufflepuff, like, yeah.
I know. I'm just
it
saying,
would be
but,
really cool if she was
she
a
would
Slytherin
be a great Slytherin.
Yeah.
If she were a Slytherin, she'd be, like, a great example of, I don't think she reads Slytherin at all, but, like, because of her bloodline, and we know that families can influence how you get sorted. I guess the first great examples of Slytherin we get are Curious Child.
Yeah.
Cursed Child. Which right. I think that's what she did, a little bit what they were trying to do, is like pull back, hey, this was one-dimensional because it was from the eyes of a 10-year-old. But
right. Yeah, and like, also, because we're trying to get like multiple personalities through the lens of Gryffindor, there's a lot of Gryffindors who I think when they get called up, it's like, oh, but this person's a Gryffindor. It's like, yeah, but there's a lot of Gryffindors that if you didn't need them all to be in the same common room having conversations with each other, you would sort into other houses. Like, in my brain, Fred and George are a really good example of what not evil Slytherins would look like.
Well, all the Slytherins in our audience are just standing up and applauding right now. So we're glad to have you on the podcast to say things that we do not say on our podcast because we don't hold those opinions, but it's great to have that kind of opinion represented.
You're welcome. Glad to do my part.
Yeah, so back to Marius here. I
think he's a Ravenclaw.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, you can talk about that.
Sorry, I just totally cut you off.
No,
you
go ahead.
First, and no. Then I'll go.
Okay, well, I mean, I see the Gryffindor argument, too, for sure. I was kind of deciding between Gryffindor and Hufflepuff for him, and maybe that's a little bit of Eddie Redmayne, like, bias here, because he's Newt Scamander, and Newt Scamander's a Hufflepuff, but I do definitely see that side of Marius where he's so, like, idealistic and has a little bit of naivety as well. I mean, just the fact that he falls in love so quickly, I think, kind of shows a super, like, trusting side of him that I think is a Hufflepuff characteristic. But I ended up coming out down on the Gryffindor side, just because I think, like, the way that we see him, like he decides, like, he's willing to sacrifice himself, and I mean, and I think, like, while that's not just a Gryffindor thing, I think that the way that he, like, rebels against his family, and that he's choosing between, like, the greater good and a more personal reason, I think that's definitely a Gryffindor kind of, like, battle that kind of happens in a lot of Gryffindor heroes that we see. So I felt like that story kind of matched with a Gryffindor one, but I'm not totally married to the idea. So I'm interested to hear your argument, Zach.
I think he's intellectually on board with the idea of revolution and then not actually super good at carrying it out. I think that the fact that he lives is an argument for him not being in Gryffindor, because I think he could very, like, and he is saved by someone else. But I do think that he's, like, his background is a student. That's what he's into. That's how he gets kind of, like, swept up in the intellectual idea of this struggle. And, like, he's certainly brave, but as we've talked about, like, bravery is all of the houses. Mm-hmm. And then he's just, like, he's a little bit of a nerd to me. I think he is. I think he's, like, an attractive nerd and a charming nerd and a nerd on, like, the right side of this thing. But I think he's a nerd. And to me, that makes him a Ravenclaw. Yeah.
I had not considered that at all, but I think that that's a really interesting read on him. I see the intellectual side for sure. Alice, what were your thoughts, or where did you sort him in the first place?
Well, I was between Gryffindor and Ravenclaw, so that's great.
super helpful.
But no, the more I'm thinking about it, I am leaning towards Ravenclaw at this point, just because I think he really has that idealism, but more in sort of that theoretical, philosophical sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think, you know, there's a lot of Gryffindors that are idealistic, but they are not necessarily idealistic in the theory of it. They're more in the action. So I like what Zach was saying, too, about him surviving being an argument for him being a Ravenclaw, because he's not really in the center of the action quite as much as the other ones.
I was Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff. I think he's pretty much not, to me, he's not a Gryffindor. And I think that, like, his journey is, like, almost like a fish out of water surrounded by so many Gryffindors, where he has to discover how he is bold. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it comes naturally to him. And to me, the, like, love sickness side leans more Hufflepuff, where I feel like it feels more Hufflepuffy to be apt to, like, see someone and fall in love with them, because they're just, like, maybe more brimming with, like, that kind of optimism. But I like the Ravenclaw vibe. Yeah, I think he's not a Gryffindor. I think he learns to be brave, but I don't think it's as natural of a quality to him.
And he might be a kind of, like, love swept up Ravenclaw in the mold of, like, Cho.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get a ton of romantic storylines in Harry Potter, but that's one of the ones that we do. And she feels very Marius to me.
Yeah, well, maybe he's like a Roger Davies, who's, like, kind of a horn dog. We see him, like, with a bunch of girls, so maybe it's sort of that mold.
This is also being strongly colored, by the way, for me, by the person who played him in high school, by me.
Okay.
Who was, like, a full, like, Big fully nerd. A Ravenclaw. Like, beautiful voice. Such a beautiful voice.
That's where, like, you're getting the nerdy vibes from?
What? From having a beautiful voice? Or this guy? He wasn't a nerd. He wasn't a nerd. Like, nerd is not even the right word, because he wasn't a nerd. He's just, like, I don't know. I think the dude's a Ravenclaw. I'm just going with my gut here.
I just, I see the philosophical side of it, for mm-hmm. sure. Maybe I haven't quite caught the nerdy side, but I can see that a little bit. I just think, yeah, it's more of this, like, idealistic, philosophical, and, like, that's where I see the, you know, being in love thing. That, I mean, I think to some intellectuals that can be like a very romantic idea, mm-hmm. you know. So I think that's the Ravenclaw side of being in love is, you know, the idea of being in love.
Yeah, I really like the Ravenclaw sorting for him, and I'm totally on board. So yeah, let's hear the sorting beret and what it has to say.
Ah, Marius, my boy Marius, for you I will say, Ravenclaw!
That's perfect. Okay.
The sorting beret is really turning into a chef.
Yeah. Yeah, and calls everybody my boy, I guess. Gavroche and Marius.
Well, that's just because he called Gavroche a small boy. Oh, Marius small is boy. is literally the sorting beret's son.
Oh, okay. So that's it's all boy. Adding up now. Okay, let's go ahead and sort Marius's counterpart or love interest, Cosette. Zach, you want to start with this one?
Do I? I didn't think through any of these beforehand. Was I supposed to? I'm just kind of like firing off the hip here.
Well, that's kind of what you do.
Yeah,
so.
That's kind of your strong suit, so that's yeah. good.
Cosette. Cosette? I think Cosette might be a Hufflepuff. I think that Cosette is endlessly kind, even to people who do not deserve it to her. I think that she is an eternal optimist. I think Castle on the Cloud is kind of a good example of that. I think that she is very emotionally in touch to be swept up in this sort of like love situation amidst while a war is going on all around her. And I think she has a strong love and respect for family, and I don't just mean that as blood family, I mean family, like the people that are around her to take care of her. So I think she's a Hufflepuff.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that Cosette, like, is, like, the embodiment of, like, a pure-hearted person. She's so kind, so accepting. She's, I think, like, in her childhood, I mean, I really like bringing up the song that she sings, because I think that definitely speaks to a Hufflepuff characteristic. But I think also the fact that she's so, like, I mean, she just has this, like, strength of spirit that I think a lot of Hufflepuffs really can demonstrate, that she's able to just, like, hold her head high throughout all that. I mean, a pretty traumatizing childhood that she has to go through, and then she just comes out of it just, like, such a pure and, like, amazing person. I mean, I think that's her main characteristic, is that she's so good-hearted and so accepting. I think she's definitely a Hufflepuff.
Oh, yeah. No other house would, like, be like, oh, I'm a poor orphan and everyone's being mean to me, but let me use my imagination while I sweep to imagine, like, a better situation. And she's so kind, and the way that she, like, takes care of her father feels very, like, loyal. I feel like she's, I mean, in the musical, she is a, like, thinner character. Like, we don't get as much depth to her story. And I don't want to equate that I think Hufflepuff don't have depth. But I think, like, the things that we do know are just that, like, she's really kind, she's very loving, she's an optimist. So I feel like, yeah, for sure, Hufflepuff.
Yeah, I also have her in Hufflepuff. And I think for all the reasons that you guys said, she's just so charitable, forgiving, just a wonderful person. And I like what you're saying, Jess, about how, like, she's a little bit thinner of a character, meaning, like, not as fleshed out. And I think that is makes it easier to put her in Hufflepuff, because I think sometimes with Hufflepuff, it can be hard when you see characters exemplifying traits, like maybe they're a little bit mean sometimes or something, then you don't want to put them in Hufflepuff. But the fact that she is a little bit of a flatter character makes it so that, like, you're seeing those nice Hufflepuff traits only. So it makes it very cut and dry as far as, like, being able to put her in Hufflepuff.
Right. I think that's right. It's not like, it's not a "and here's the rest" situation. It's like, hey, we don't know that much about her. The only things we know are that she's nice, loyal. Like, the only things we know are straight up Hufflepuff qualities.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely. The only Harry Potter parallel I had, and this is probably just going on looks alone, but I also do think it works a little bit, is Luna. I think that while Luna's definitely a clear Ravenclaw, I think that the characteristics that she shares with Cosette are definitely that, like, accepting and, like, you know, kind-hearted characteristics. It also helps that they look a lot alike.
Yeah.
I put down Helga Hufflepuff because she just Cosette just seemed like a pure good Hufflepuff, so I just felt like Helga Hufflepuff would be the closest thing to a true Hufflepuff.
So. Go to the OG. Go right there.
Go to the source.
We don't really know Helga Hufflepuff, so that's kind of a reach, but...
We know a decent amount about her.
Yeah, that's true. But kind of the same amount that we know about Cosette.
Yeah, exactly.
She was really nice, really accepting.
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and put the sorting beret on Cosette's head.
Uh-huh, what is this? Another person to sort? Well, Cosette, you for sure must be a Hufflepuff!
Perfect. Great. So,
and now I do love that the sorting beret is getting a touch of strong bad.
My god, like, Hufflepuff, you guys.
Hey, did I cheat? That is not what that light switch is for.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to Cosette's mother, Fantine. I had some trouble with her. I think that, like, she's hardly in the musical. I mean, she sings some major songs, but then she's kind of, you blink and she's gone. So it was kind of hard to come up with, like, real personality characteristics, because I feel like what we see of her is when she's totally stripped of, like, all basic needs, and so it's really just like down to like lizard brain for her, so it's hard to like really see what she's like in, like, if she were, you know, in a more like happy situation, but at the same time that kind of does show us a little bit more of what her true character is, maybe. So I think, like, we see her being really resourceful. I mean, she's willing to kind of do whatever it takes to survive, and the fact that she's surviving for her daughter is important, I think, but I think that what the characteristic of resourcefulness and, like, that scrappy nature that she has actually really spoke to a Slytherin characteristic for me. So I ended up putting her in Slytherin, but I do see also her cynicism, I think, also puts her in Slytherin, but I can also see a lot of other arguments, so I'm curious to hear what all of you say.
I like that. Because also, I mean, like, her story, the character that she's, like, to me most alike is, like, Merope Gaunt.
That's who I wrote, you know, too, which, yeah.
Yeah, which I was like, let me make sure I said his name right. Sorry if you heard
is
typing.
Is that how that's pronounced? I've never heard that word said out loud.
Yeah, Merope.
Or Merope. Yeah, it's the name is from Greek myth, too, but, yeah, I think that this, I think she's a good example of, like, an ultimately good but broken Slytherin.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I think that this is that side of, like, I believe that there are plenty of good Slytherins, especially when, like, push comes to shove. And I do think that there is a scrappy, cunning thing about the way that she's able to, like, get by. And to me, I just can, like, hear the lyrics of I Dreamed a Dream have this, like, grandiose quality, you know, of, like, the tigers come at night.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems like the way a Slytherin would talk about a breakup. It's like, you know what? Like, this person left me, and the way I describe it is, like, the tigers come at night. Like, that sort of, I don't know, just that, for me, like, that sounds like something someone would write if your common room was a dungeon and was, like, had mossy stones. And I think that, like, yeah, she's not a bad character. She's a good character. And she has, like, tons of redemption. And she is the person who comes to take Jean Valjean away. I like her. I like her song. We don't get to know her that well. And all I have is this sort of, like, I feel like Slytherin vibes feel right, though.
Yeah, Alice, what were your thoughts?
Well, so, okay, I totally get the Slytherin argument, because I agree. She does do anything that it takes, and she's very resourceful, very scrappy. But I'm just going to argue for another house, just because I feel like, to me, what defines her most is not that she's resourceful, because I think she is resourceful, but I think she only is... I think she only does that stuff as a very last resort. Like, I think a Slytherin, like a true Slytherin, would be scrappier in the first place. Like, so to me, she was really hardworking and she really had like strong morals and stuff, but she had to do that because she's a good mother. I think, you know, because she's a good mother, and we've determined that there's good mothers in all houses, but I don't think that she is resourceful, like, as her first nature. Like, I think she only does that out of her sort of mother side of herself. And so it's kind of hard to explain, but I just think that a Slytherin kind of would maybe relish kind of trying to be creative in the way that they are supporting their family or supporting herself. Like, I just think she would take a little bit more, like, ownership in it. Whereas, like, the stuff that she is forced into doing, it's literally out of a last resort. So that's my argument against Slytherin. And to me, though, I am kind of split on whether she could be Hufflepuff or Gryffindor. Hufflepuff because she's a hard worker and she's naturally just, you know, like that good hard worker. But the Gryffindor side, because she is brave and she, you know, is willing to stand up for what's right, I guess. So I don't know. I didn't have a very strong argument for what I think she should be, but I thought very hard about whether or not I thought she was in Slytherin. And I just thought, ultimately, I didn't think she had the right reasons for what she was doing to put her in Slytherin.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I guess, like, yeah, for me, I think that the fact that she has this, like, cynicism based on, like, her experience, like, she goes to the resourcefulness and she goes to the, like, not necessarily woe is me, because I definitely agree, like, she should be saying woe is me, but, I mean, I think that she kind of develops this, like, side of herself that is so Slytherin. So, I mean, I'm a little torn now, but Zach, we haven't heard from you yet.
Yeah, I mean, I would point out that resourcefulness only pops up when you need it. Right? Like, people don't go out of their way to, like, be resourceful for no reason. I think that, like, it is kind of like a clutch skill, right? So it's, I'm trying to think of what the Slytherin way of going about your life before this would have been if you were, like, a poor factory worker who lived in France. Well, like, I don't know what that job is.
I just kind of think that she might, I agree. I see what you're saying, but I kind of just think that maybe she wouldn't have ended up in this situation. Like, she would have gone about this more as, like, the Thénardiers. Like, they were willing to, you know, I don't know, they kind of set themselves up for success in some ways. And a lot of the stuff, I mean, I know it was out of her control, but I don't know. I mean, could see her being more scrappy or more, like, more scrappy ahead of time. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. I get that. I think for me, that she ends up with child, and that ultimately gets her booted out of her job because she's unwed. Is that what happens? I'm trying to remember. The thing she gets confronted at. And to me, like, the stereotypical argument would be that, okay, if she was a Thénardier, she would have just, like, ditched the kid and kept the job. But I will say that I think that is a kind of surface reading of Slytherin, because if you dig into, like, I always mess this up and second get this. It's J.K. Rowling, right? Not Rowling.
Yeah, because she's rolling in cash.
Great. Okay. So what she writes in the Slytherin, like, house intro letter is that they have a very, 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 very strong want and desire to protect their own, which is what I think is at play here. Mm-hmm. And she is willing to do basically anything to do that. She's like, hair, whatever, gone. Teeth, whatever, gone. This is my kid. This person's on my team. I'm taking care of them. I'm going to do whatever it takes. And she does for, like, a long time. And other people mess it up for her. Like, it's going well until some other, like, jerk in the factory is like, hey, kick this person out.
Finds their letter. Yeah. And I think, like, I like what you're saying, that maybe she would have done more sooner, but I think, like, as a woman in that time, not. Like, I think this is max scrappiness. Mm-hmm. And I also, I think, like, just the fact that where she has to go to, I think she's already, that is the version of being scrappy, is to, like, pay someone to take your child and work for them quiet and just, like, try to stay quiet about it and do your own thing and mind your own business. But yeah, and I think I also, I'm just like, she's straight up Merope gone.
I know. I was going to say, I really like that you said that too, because I had said that, and then I was like, that's a little, like, that's too mean to Fantine. Like, Merope, like, she's just so, like, so, I mean, I guess, I think Fantine is a little bit stronger than Merope
is.
Oh,
yes.
But I'm really glad that you said that too, because I think that it's a really good parallel, and I was feeling, like, kind of guilty for saying that, but now I'm on board.
No, there's a lot of
simple parallels, but I think Merope gone is also a little bit more questionable and definitely more devious if you think about like what a love potion's implications are. But but I think that there's obviously similarities in their storyline. Sorry, you were going to say something and I forgot what I was going to say, so now I'll stop talking.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I totally see the Slytherin argument, so I'm fine with putting her in Slytherin because I do think she is very resourceful, but.
Yeah, so I guess we are just waiting here on the sorting beret, so state your...
Oh, you are waiting on me? Oh, my apologies. Now I will go, Fantine. You are Slytherin!
Yeah, and she gets to join her best friends, the Thénardiers. They're going to have so much fun in the common room.
So sad.
Okay, so we just have three characters left to sort here, and I think we'll go ahead and start the final three here with Eponine.
I think Eponine is a Slytherin. I think Eponine is all the versions of, like, scrappy and resourceful that we were talking about with Fantine, but she does start it earlier and kind of, like, does whatever she needs to get by. I think that her sacrifice... I think to be... Eponine and be like, this rich guy, Marius, I'm in love with him, even though, like, we are strata apart. We're, like, worlds apart. And to be like, nope, I'm gonna make this happen. This is a thing that is in my sights and I'm gonna deal with it, is, like, an incredibly ambitious and incredibly ambitious goal that kind of reeks of a sort of self-worth and confidence in oneself that is, like, distinctly Slytherin to me. And I will have more to say on that, but I bet it will be in response to people disagreeing.
Yeah, right? Well, that's interesting. I mean, I definitely see the argument a lot, but I have to say I'm interested to hear you say that, like, she thinks she's going to do whatever it takes to get Marius, because the way I see it is that she's very, like, yes, I love him, but, like, I can't do anything about it because of, like, where I am in my life and because of who he loves. And I feel like that... It's interesting to hear you say that interpretation of it, because it feels more like she's very, like, in her head about it, but not going to do anything about it, is I think. But I think, like, the main characteristic I see with her, going off of that, is that I think she is such an overthinker. I think that she's highly intelligent. We definitely see that cunning side of her, like you're saying. So I see the Slytherin in that way, but I think that the way that she's cunning is through this, like, way that she's just always in her head. I think that, like, she's so, like, analyzing every situation. I mean, she sees, like, everything. I mean, she sees what's happening with her parents. She sees what's happening with Marius and Cosette. I mean, I feel like out of the characters in that, like, you know, circle of Les Mis, like, she's the one who kind of is in the know. And I think that she keeps it to herself because I think that she's such a, like, thinker, and I think that she's, like, just this really super analytical person who doesn't really act on those the way that she thinks. So I think that really speaks to a Ravenclaw side. And I think just the fact that she, like, I mean, she really does have these feelings, but she doesn't want to, like, really, like, go the extra mile, but, like, you know, be super scrappy about the way she goes about it. So I'm putting her in Ravenclaw, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna push back a little bit. I think she is maybe one of the scrappiest people in this entire show. Also, she's the Thénardier's kids, isn't she?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, who we have both sorted into Slytherin. So I think you can also make the argument that, like, family is coming into play in house with her as well. And I think that I think that's the end of what my thought was. I had another one, but it's gone now.
I also think she is a prime example of maybe we sort them too young, you know, because when we meet her, she's not quite 11, but they're like 8, and she it would be a straight up Slytherin. And so I think that, like, I like the Ravenclaw argument. I like the over analytical side. I think that that's like something very interesting to touch on, is that, like, she does literally, her biggest moment is getting lost in her own head, imagining what it would be like to be with him. And so I guess, like, what do we think defines her more? Is it her, like, scrappy ability to stay alive and survive and roll with the punches and, like, help out this revolution? Or is it her, like, inability to connect with people because she's so in her head? I don't really know what is more dominating, but I would say those feel like fair, like, they don't feel, it feels kind of close to 50-50 to me. She doesn't feel strongly either one, but I think if she were sorted at 11, she would 100% get sorted into Slytherin. And I think that it's like what Zach says, is you might not know you're resourceful till you have to be. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of like cruising along as this spoiled little girl. And her parents are Slytherin. I think if she was sorted at 11, she would definitely be Slytherin. But I don't know, that person she comes to be, or if she was already starting to create distance from her family of origin, she might choose Ravenclaw to separate herself, because she definitely ends up pushing away from her parents. I see both. I see them both very much in contention.
So what is the good version then of her being a Slytherin as a child and then growing up and still being a Slytherin? You know? Like, what does that look like?
I think it's there. I'm just wondering, like, if you were to try to talk about, like, what governs her heart and her head more, is it the part of her that's, like, buds with Gavroche and, like, climbing around and, like, looking out for stuff and being, but, or is it the, like, wandering around the rain, you know, and the rain on the sidewalk, all that stuff, which feels very Ravenclaw. I just don't know what, like, what's her primary, you know, person, but.
Well, I will say that I struggled very much to sort her. I wasn't sure where to put her, and I really didn't make a good decision in the end, so that's why I didn't want to go first. but I think, for me, the one thing that that did pop out to me very easily was that the character parallel that I see for her was Snape, which, it's weird, but we have the whole love story and how she's sort of the outsider in this couple. Like, I mean, okay, so Snape was super into Lily, but that's not who he ended up with. And he was willing to sort of sacrifice himself for Lily. I mean, not for her life, because she still died, but he was willing to sort of put himself out there for Lily and just devote his entire life to that. Well, that's sort of what Eponine did with Marius, too. I mean, she pretty much ended up dying because of him and the unrequited love aspect. So that's where I see her being like Snape, which
I like that very much.
Yeah. I mean, Snape is a melancholy dude. Like, you don't see it a ton, because mostly you watch him like dealing with 11-year-olds, and that's not when people do that. But in all of the flashbacks, like, Snape is like a moody in love kid. Mm-hmm. Who's like very beat down and picked upon.
Yeah.
And also, I would argue that Eponine actually does make some strides forward in her relationship, that she does. I mean, she straight up dies in his arms. It's not like they have no relationship. She's not totally on the sidelines. She's just kind of not where she wants to be. You know,
but I don't think she ever tries to really get him back.
No, I don't think
she's
so,
like,
either.
And I think your first point, you were like, that feels Slytherin, that she would try. I think she's like, I'm never going to get this. I'm worthless.
Right. Yeah. And then she kind of
discovers her own self-worth.
Yeah.
Only to die.
Because I think, like, the fact that she distances herself so much from her parents speaks to, like, I think she's ashamed of that Slytherin side. And I mean, I'm not saying that you should be ashamed of a Slytherin heritage, but
speaking to the Slytherin side a little bit more, though, like, this is kind of, like, the other thing that she has that's, like, the arc of Snape is that she starts out, and this is more so in the book, I think, too, than what you get to see in the movie, but she starts out as a much, like, more, you know, self-centered, like, she's always throwing Cosette under the bus and that kind of thing. And then she ends up, like, in the end, she ends up making a good decision. And that's kind of the Snape arc, too. Like, he has his rough patches along the way, but in the end, he is a good person in his heart.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I think I see, like, Eponine, like, not liking Slytherins, in terms of not liking her parents and, like, wanting to rebel against them, in terms of, like, how she kind of betrays them when she, or not betrays her father when she screams to tell Cosette that the guards are coming. I think that that's kind of a anti-Slytherin move, and I'm not saying it's necessarily a Ravenclaw move, but it seems to be like that she wouldn't necessarily want to be a Slytherin because of the way that she sees her family.
But I think that's only through the lens of all Slytherins are evil.
Well,
you know?
I know, but like that's, if you... but would a Slytherin believe that, though? Like, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm not saying I agree with that viewpoint, but I'm saying that seems to be her viewpoint. So, I mean, I guess... Yeah, I mean, I see a Slytherin argument.
Kind of like Tonks's mom, you know, she's a Slytherin, right?
Yeah.
Tonks's mom.
Andromeda Tonks.
I think she's a Hufflepuff, or we don't know.
Because she's
out of the Black family tree and stuff. Because
yeah, I think that happens though when she marries Ted Tonks.
That's so Andromeda Tonks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think as a kid she could have been Slytherin. I mean, like her whole family. You know, it's rare that they're not Slytherin.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. Actually, it does look like she was in Slytherin. So. We don't know, I mean, her whole story or anything, but yes, I didn't realize that she was in Slytherin, so it's very interesting.
Yeah, I think the Ted Tonks marriage is when she gets disowned. Mm-hmm. So she may have grown up, you know, being a little more in step with her sisters.
That's true.
Yeah, I think, like, to me, I think it's like, maybe you think of Slytherins would just go along, perhaps just, like, only being concerned about themselves and like the people very close to them, unless they like absolutely had to like look up, and you know what I mean, like but it's really hard. We don't like get to know the Slytherins, so it's hard to know what the mapping is. I really like the Snape arc though.
I'm coming around on the Slytherin argument, and I think just thinking of like her song being On My Own, I think that could be a Ravenclaw or Slytherin thing, but it actually does kind of seem like a Slytherin kind of thing where it's like a it just sounds Slytherin to me, just the very like emo sort of view of the world. I can cave to Slytherin here.
Please make a music video that is On My Own, but with Snape clips. I gotta have it. I can't make it, internet, but you certainly
but
can.
But someone needs to.
That would be amazing.
Someone needs to.
Maybe other than Shut Up Tim.
Yeah.
That was the listener from earlier. But Shut Up Tim will probably be up to that as well. So maybe we need somebody who's going to be very... like, maybe we need both versions. Let's put it that way.
Was there anything else that we wanted to touch on with him? Or her?
Snape.
With Eponine / Snape.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I have a question about Snape. Maybe you guys can help fill me in. This is going to be counter to my argument, but I think it is more important to my argument about Slytherins as a whole. Do we have any evidence that Snape is like a real shitty kid? It's or like in the flashbacks that I remember, it's more like James is a jerk. Snape
they talk
is just
about
kind...
that he's hanging out with the Protean Death Eaters.
Yeah, and
that, like,
well, that's
that
not great.
Dabbling in dark arts.
And we see when he talks to Lily about Petunia, it's like very problematic. He's like, "Why would you care what she thinks? She's a Muggle," and like it's a very—I mean, it's probably influenced by his parents' view, but the way he talks about people who he doesn't value, like Muggles, that's definitely questionable.
But yeah, gotcha. I do think that there's. You know, it's kind of like a blend of nature and nurture of why he turns out the way he does.
Good. Thank you. I couldn't remember what Snape was.
Yeah.
I remember it all through like the kind of lens of like him being beat up by the marauders.
Yeah.
He certainly doesn't deserve to almost get murdered by a werewolf, but I think he has.
But he's not great. Yeah.
He has some strands of elitism.
Yes.
But obviously so strong that he doesn't want to be friends with someone who's Muggle born,
right?
Even though he eventually does call her Mudblood, but I think like the early stages of his friendship, when she asks, "Is there a difference?" and he tells her, "No."
Yeah.
So I think like you know, it's classic Snape. He's complicated.
Yeah, yes. classic Snape. Okay, let's go ahead and hear the Beret's verdict here.
Uh-huh, who is this, Eponine? Well, for you, I must sort you to Slytherin!
Well, Eponine does like to wear the beret, especially that when she puts the beret on in the movie, we were, like, laughing so hard, because it's like she, like, I think she's supposed to be pretending to be a boy so she can go, like, fight with the men, but she, like, she looks like such a, like, diva when she puts it on. She's like, ooh, like, I'm so
sassy
fashionable.
With my hat.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Eponine, always sassy.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Always sassy.
Yes. Okay, so we're down to our final two characters here. It's only fitting here. So let's, I guess we'll start with Javert here, or my alter ego, clearly, with the bicorn hat. Jess or Zach, does either one of you want to start with him?
I'd love to start, but it's a controversial point because I'm going to slightly cannibalize our later conversation.
Okay.
Is that
ahead.
Okay?
Go ahead.
I think that part of what's so compelling about the central argument between Javert and Jean Valjean relates back to the fact that they're the same. I think that they are two examples of how Gryffindors can end up. Because I think they're both brave, they're both bold, but they've taken those lessons and they've sort of understood them and they've let them like sink into themselves in different ways. And to me, I think like, you know, the confrontation, like these men actually do have a ton in common. They just, one has become overly obsessed with the letter of the law and one has understood the spirit of the law. But I think they're both driven by greater ideals. I think they're both brave. I think like Javert is an example of a bad Gryffindor, like, you know, that like they can be power hungry in a way that then distorts and they no longer see in shades of gray. They only see in black and white. And Jean Valjean is like the more idyllic version. So I would say they're both Gryffindors. Both sides of they're two sides of the bold, brave coin. And Javert shows us how it can get kind of mutated if you become too simplistic in your pursuit of your ideal.
Wow, yeah, that's really interesting. And I did not put Javert in Gryffindor, but I think, yeah, we can just kind of talk about both of them at the same time. What do you think?
Yeah, sure,
Okay, well, so Javert, I totally see what you're saying, and I really like that idea that they are in the same house, so I'm kind of maybe wavering towards that now as well. But I'll just say my argument originally was for Ravenclaw with Javert.
Yeah, mine too.
I just think, like...
And I get it, guys. I get it.
I just think like he is so rigid on his beliefs about the law, and I mean this is what you're saying as well, Jess. It's just kind of how we're interpreting which house that should belong to, but I think that he is so like literal with how he reads the law, and he just believes so much in justice and not in mercy at all, or not in understanding, you know, the law within context. And so to me, his direct parallel in Harry Potter was Barty Crouch Sr. And I felt like that was, you know, I personally thought that that was almost a perfect comparison because they're very similar in how they feel about going about seeking justice and how they feel about trying to capture criminals and just how they both kind of lose themselves in that process and ultimately kind of become bad people themselves by trying to right the wrongs of others. So to me, that was a Ravenclaw because I think Barty Crouch Sr. is in Ravenclaw, and I just see that as a very intellectual take on the law. But depending on how you interpret it, I could see that Gryffindor thing, and I like the idea of them both being in Gryffindor because I do agree that they have some things in common.
Yeah, I was
really like that Barty Crouch. Sorry, I love Barty Crouch Sr. That's a really good comparison. Sorry, just before we got too far away from it. Sorry,
yeah, thanks. Sorry. Yeah, no, I thought it was pretty like just I had never thought of it before, but they both just have that. They're just so similar. It's very interesting to see that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I also had him in Ravenclaw, and the Gryffindor argument's definitely really interesting. I was interested when I was doing my research on Javert. Did you know that according to Urban Dictionary, Javert is the same thing as an obsessive perfectionist? And that says Ravenclaw to me. So I think that the fact that he just, like, he spends his whole life obsessing over these things, and I think that definitely Ravenclaws and obsession are a common I guess, correlation that we see a lot. And I think that the way that he goes about, like, he's so conflicted when, like, his own, like, belief system is shaken. And I think that that speaks to, like, his Ravenclaw side. And, I mean, Alice said all the things that I had said as well. So I'm definitely still on the Ravenclaw side, but I guess I'm interested to hear what you have to say, Zach.
Yeah, that's, I mean, to me, it is such... Javert is such a case study in an intellectual understanding of what the world is, and when something breaks out of the way he views things should be, he literally kills himself because he can't, like, his brain can't, like, adapt to deal with that. And he's, I think, not coming from a place of, I guess, like, compassion is wrong, because I think you're right, Jess. I think he does believe in the justice of what he is doing, but I think the justice actually gets distorted and caught up in the letter of the law, and the letter of the law takes precedent for him, and that's what his issue is with Jean Valjean. And when he starts to think that the letter of the law might not take precedent for him, that's when he kills himself. And
yeah. I mean, I think you guys are right, but I will say we see this in characters in every house. You know, like, this fascination with the law is also very Umbridge-y, and she's a Slytherin. It's also very Ernie McMillan-y. It's also very Percy Weasley. You know, like, I think Barty Crouch Sr. is the best, but we also get to see him in, basically the same job.
Yeah.
So it's such a clear parallel. But, like, the fact that he kills himself, to me, feels a little bit more like when Percy is finally like, holy crap, yeah, I was an idiot, that he has like but you might be right, Zach, you might just be like, computer does not compute with new emotion, must die. But I think that Stars is so emotional, like, it's such a, like, searing introspection about how wrong he was. Not to say that a Ravenclaw couldn't do that, but to me, that feels more like, oh, maybe we see this man who wasn't always this way, right? We get to see, like, that he became interested in the law for the right reasons and then just became sort of, like, more bureaucratic and fastidious over time. But, you know, I ain't going to push this Gryffindor two sides of the coin argument up a mountain.
No,
I think the dudes have more in common. I think what they have in common is what is so interesting about the central struggle.
Yeah.
I think you're right, Jess. I think, though, I will say that I think Stars is a fundamentally not emotional song.
Mm-hmm.
To me, Stars is like, is the computer of his brain being like, there are stars and they are constant, they shine, and this is what they do, and there is good and there is bad, and if you're good, this is what happens, and if you're bad, this is what happens. An unwillingness to break rules is like a distinctly un-Gryffindor quality to me, which is why I think Percy is more of a Ravenclaw than a Gryffindor. Like, I know he is a Gryffindor because he's in Gryffindor, but there's a lot of characters in Gryffindor that I don't think are Gryffindors, and if they are, then, like, any metric we use to sort everyone doesn't make sense, and especially for Gryffindor, because again, the book is a Gryffindor lens. We meet, like, a lot of Gryffindors. I also, this is a side note, I think Dolores Umbridge, I take umbrage with the fact that JK put her in Slytherin only because she is so different from every other, like, mm-hmm, version of evil that we see in the books, that it was such an opportunity to make anyone else, to have her be from any other house.
Yeah.
And it was missed. To me, I think she would have been a much more interesting character if it's like, oh, by the way, this is what an evil Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff looks like.
Yeah, I think that's totally true.
Yeah, I've always actually, like, thought of her, like, I always think she's Ravenclaw, and then I'm like, wait, no, she's actually Slytherin, and then I'm like, only because she's evil, is that right?
It's,
like,
lazy. Yeah. So lazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not one to call J.K. Rowling lazy, but I will kind of agree with you there.
No, she made the thing that I like She made the book I like more than any books in the world. But it is one of those things that it's like, yeah, we're building a children's narrative here. These are the bad guys go here. Where then, when the fandom gets like insane, myself included, and decides to like have people represented by all four houses, that's when the Slytherin of it all becomes a real problem, when you limit yourself just to what's going on in the books and you don't like extrapolate any further.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting your two, like, Jess and Zach, your two interpretations of stars, because I feel like it's really indicative of the two houses that you each belong to, because I definitely think, like, the Slytherin cynical view of it, and, I mean, I'm kind of actually in Zach's camp on this one, is that it is really just a kind of, like, conflicting interest here. Like, it doesn't make any sense to him, and he's really just has that fixed mindset here, whereas the Gryffindor argument would be, like, he is seeing good for the first time ever, and, like, he just, like, doesn't, it's hard for him to understand, like, seeing more of an empathetic view of it, I guess. So I just thought that was interesting, the way you two, like, diverged on that.
thank you for agreeing with me. I should say, I don't know that I even think it's cynical. I think it's just, it is comfortable with what it's his worldview, right? Mm-hmm. It's a song about literally how he thinks the machinations of the heavens work. Like the structure, God on down, what the rules are. And like the struggle with having to think what the implications are of that not being the case.
Right. And your take on it, like that's your interpretation, that's a cynical view of it. That's what I was trying to say. Like, I'm not saying he's cynical. I'm saying viewing it that way. That's how I, like, my own interpretation is,
but... Yeah, you might be right.
It's certainly less saccharine, you know. Yeah. It's certainly less it's less sentimental.
Exactly.
Mine is like, that's so sad. I finally figured it out and he has to die.
All right. So I guess we first have to put the beret on Javert's head. There's not room with the bicorn hat there, but have to make room.
Is it my turn? I'm sorry, I was taking a brief nap because that girl Eponine walked away with me on her head. I am back to say that you, Javert, are in Rising Claw.
Perfect. Eponine was really not happy to part with the beret. She looks so good in it.
So good. Such an iconic look.
Yes. Okay, well, we did already talk a bit about Jean Valjean, but I think we'd be kind of shortchanging him if we didn't discuss him a little bit more. I think at least it sounds like we're all in agreement that he's a Gryffindor, but for me...
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have you start then, Zach.
I think he's a Hufflepuff. I think he is an example of what a really, really, I think everything he does is for family. The reason that he, like, gets caught and put into jail in the first place is for, like, stealing a loaf of bread to save his family. Then he goes off and, like, steals more to save his family. I agree that he, like, clearly has the kind of, like, disregard for rules of a Gryffindor, but I don't think it happens lightly with him. Like, when Harry Potter's like, rules or whatever, I'm above rules, I don't think that's where he's coming from. I think he is coming from doing what is right, not doing what is easy or what will give him the most, like, acclaim. The fact that he, like, kind of, like, settles down, lays low, and becomes the chairman or foreman or what, not a foreman, but he kind of, like, has his own company,
Monsieur
pulls
Le
other people. Yeah,
the
he becomes the mayor. That's right, he becomes the mayor. Which I guess is a little bit of a Gryffindor thing to do. I will concede.
Yeah.
But I mean, he doesn't seem like, he doesn't flaunt power, and he does not seem to get into, like, the sort of trappings of office that you might think that a Slytherin or a Gryffindor would. I feel like you always feel like he is extremely aware of what he has and, like, grateful for it, which to me is a very, like, Hufflepuff quality. And I feel like you can't go from person that stole candlesticks to mayor of a city without just an insane amount of hard work. And I think those are all Hufflepuff traits. I'm not saying that he is like absolutely not a Gryffindor. I can see the argument for it 100%, but I don't think he is a Gryffindor style hero in the way that most of our Gryffindor style heroes are. That's more or less all of it.
Yeah, I definitely see the Hufflepuff side, and I think if I was picking a secondary house for Jean Valjean, I would probably say Hufflepuff, but I think, like, thinking about the move of, like, stealing the loaf of bread in the first place, like, I agree that the motivation is definitely, like, helping the family, like, almost a charity kind of thing, but the fact that he goes to that length to do it, I think, I mean, it's not, like, a huge length, but it's kind of an arrogant move to think that you're gonna get away with that, and I feel like a Hufflepuff would figure out a different way. Like maybe like talking to the person who has the bread or like something more of a like interaction or like something less of a like bold move. And I think like that the boldness of stealing the bread and then even later on stealing the candlesticks, I think that that's kind of a Gryffindor kind of bold arrogance that fits with that side.
Except that he gets caught both times. Well, I would argue if he was a Slytherin or a Gryffindor, he would not have been caught. I think he does it, but I don't think he's suited for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know, Zach. The main Gryffindors are always just bumbling. Like, what about when Hermione's like, can you tell me what my friend Draco wanted to buy here? Like, they're not like universally like sleek spies. Yeah. They're getting caught in Gringotts and just like bashing out of there on a dragon. Like,
no,
I think that like,
for real. But I agree. But like, if you're gonna do that, Hermione's, and if you took away the fact that Hermione is a Gryffindor and we're like, here are the traits of this person. Where do you sort them? Where does she go?
Well, she says Ravenclaw. I mean, this is the other thing that we haven't like talked about that much is like all of these people can also have choice.
Yeah.
Which is another, I mean, obviously it was like pushing this up a hill, but like, I think Javert, if they were like, Ravenclaw, Gryffindor, I think he would have picked Gryffindor because he thinks it looks better. But I think like, ultimately you are defined by your choices,
mm-hmm.
not just like what's in your head when you're 11. And there's the way that he's able to like rise and take on a leadership capacity, even to me doesn't scream Hufflepuff. Like, I think a Hufflepuff would have gotten to that quiet life a lot sooner. Also, this is like way more superficial and is more just like a tendency, but brute physical strength, I think, is very Gryffindor, and they say he's the strongest man they've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually was going to bring that up too, because I think that just like him lifting all that stuff, like the cart and the boat and whatever, like he definitely like that screams Gryffindor to me, and that's not that's not really canon, but
no, we can't really say that, are we? Like physically strong people
well,
are in Gryffindor.
Jock. Like
I just think it. I think it adds to the cause.
Yeah, sure. Tend to be like Hagrid. Like I think like strength can be physical or not, and I think when you have physical strength, you are often in Gryffindor. And I think like I feel like for sure that's something that Godric Gryffindor would prize, and so therefore want in his house. And like all of the Weasleys except for Ron are supposed to be like fairly like. Well, I guess maybe not Percy, but they're pretty like stocky.
Yeah.
You know, like Charlie's really stocky. The twins are supposed to be stocky.
Right.
I just think like there's something about physical strength that feels more Gryffindor. And I think the ability to just like,
yeah.
And when he's really, really old, he carries Maria through the sewers.
Yes.
I think if you were a Hufflepuff, you would have like sat in the sewers till he woke up and been like, hi, buddy, can we get a snack?
No, and I do think that the kind of heroism that we see from him, like when he rescues Marius from the sewers, like that was where he seemed the most Gryffindor to me. Like, I agree. I see the Hufflepuff traits in a lot of what he does, like how he really does try to practice like that charity and forgiveness and stuff. But I feel like those traits were things he had to learn. Whereas, like, some of the more daring things that he does were more inherent to his character.
Yeah. And, like, once he does learn those characteristics, like, he takes it to such a Gryffindor level with being, like, such a martyr. Like, he's like, oh, I have to go away. Like, you can't see me because I'm such a criminal. Like,
I can't tell you why I'm leaving, right. But I'm gonna go be a martyr. That just feels Gryffindor
it's
to me.
It's so Gryffindor. And, I mean, I think, like, that's sort of a Harry kind of characteristic, but, I mean, I think... I guess...
Oh, totally. Totally walking to the forest by yourself.
Right. Exactly. And then, like, not... Like, it's sort of like a, I have to do this on my own kind of attitude. And I feel like Hufflepuffs are more about the teamwork and the, like, working together. So...
Yeah, I can see all that. I guess I was reading him in more of, like, a Cedric Diggory type mm-hmm. vibe. Who is also, like, a pretty... Like, is certainly physically stronger than Harry is.
That's true.
Isn't he?
I think it has more to do with his age difference, though.
Yeah,
like,
that's
17
true.
Compared to a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah, I mean, Harry is described as scrawny in general.
Yeah.
He grew up quite
I'm not saying all Gryffindors are strong. I just think if you're a real strong dude, you're probably a Gryffindor. I just think that we see... Yeah, exactly. I guess, you know, guys, it wasn't my best argument. I was just saying, I think it's a component.
It was a good argument for the moment.
That fits in this case. Yeah. The other Harry Potter parallel, maybe an obvious one, would be Sirius Black being, like, the escaped criminal, like, who's not really a criminal kind of idea. But I also, I mean, Sirius, like, post-Azkaban is, like, not really similar to Jean Valjean post...
No, he doesn't seem to take those lessons to heart to the
Sirius
same level
doesn't.
And really reflect on...
I mean, he doesn't
on...
really have the opportunity to.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Okay, well, Zach,
yeah,
are you
I can get behind Gryffindor, for
okay.
sure.
Okay, okay.
All right, well, let's go ahead and get that sorting beret right on his head.
Oh, I'm sorry it took me so long, because Inspector Javert also walked away with me on his head. But now I am back to sort my good friend Jean Valjean into Gryffindor!
They're
awesome.
Good friends now.
the sorting beret is friends with everybody. Okay, so actually, I think we have a pretty interesting lineup here. We've finished our 11 characters, and we ended up with two Hufflepuffs, Bishop Muriel and Cosette. We have two Ravenclaws, Javert and Marius. And we have three Gryffindors, Jean Valjean, Enjolras, and Gavroche. And then we have four Slytherins, which is interesting. Fantine, Eponine, Thénardier, and Madame Thénardier.
We kind of sorted the Thénardiers as one.
Yeah, they're kind of like Fred and George.
So yeah, that's actually a really even spread, and I didn't really expect it to be quite as even as it turned out, but just kind of the way we came down on everyone, it turned out to be pretty evenly split.
We did.
Yeah, I'd say you're probably influenced by having a Slytherin here, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
really,
that's true. Yes.
Really to speak your truth and live... openly and honestly as a proud Slytherin.
Thank you. It's really nice to hear you say that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, my closeness with Zach has really taught me not to hate all Slytherins.
Yeah.
And not to be so Gryffindor-centric. And to really see, you know, like, hey, we it's true, we'd all be 25%. So, like, we can't all be Gryffindors, you know.
Very true.
It is true that moment of being, like, because I thought I was a Ravenclaw for forever, because I read the Sorting Hat song as, like, wit and learning, like, wit is comedy, and then, like, the more I've grown up, it's like, that's not what they're talking about. but it being a Slytherin has become an exercise in, like, okay, if I'm a Slytherin and I'm not just, like, at my core, a broken and horrible... disgusting human being, like, what does that mean? And it does involve a decent amount of, like, acrobatic interpretations of the book.
Yeah, well, and I think that it's been a breath of fresh air for our listeners who do not like the way we often talk about Slytherins to have you on the podcast.
Of course, it's all good fun, of course.
Yes, well, the Slytherins don't always interpret it that way, but...
Yeah, true.
Yeah, so thank you so much for joining us, you guys. Just for listeners who are not familiar with your work, where can they find you?
Yeah, thanks for having us. We have a podcast called Off Book, the Improvised Musical Podcast. It's on Earwolf, comes out every Tuesday. Zach and I, plus a piano player, Scott, and our producer, Dana, on drums, and a guest, a different comedian or person, improviser,
sometimes people from Broadway improvise a whole new musical with us, and it's great. Off book.
Yeah. Off book.
And I will say, the description of it is just so out there. Like, people probably don't know what to expect if you haven't heard it before, but I just think you just have to listen to it in order to get it.
Yes.
And definitely give it a try, because it's really awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. This was so much fun.
Yes. We're so glad you could come on the show. And just for our listeners' sake, we will be back on Monday with a new book club episode. And until next time, we're the Real Weird Sisters.
We're the Weird Sisters. We're the Real Weird Sisters. All you other weird sisters are fine, but not the Vickers. Will the Real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.